This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's just coming up to 6:06, and of course, it being International Women's Day, we decided to dedicate the whole hour to this. This day is meant to celebrate everything that women have achieved, while also calling for men and women to be treated the same. And the theme this year is a great one. It's Balance for Better, a call to action for driving gender balance across the world.
And on that note about balance, we're making strides forward, but we've still got a way to go. In labour participation, only 54.7% of women participate in the workforce here in Malaysia, compared to 80% of men, yet approximately half of all professional and technical workers are women. And then when you get to management and senior roles, only about 22% of these positions are occupied by women.
And of course, we know about political representation too. There was that call to achieve 30% representation in every level of governance. Right now, 32 out of 222 MPs are women. That's about 14.5%. In the cabinet, 9 out of 50 cabinet members are women, so that's 18.
And of course, there are still plenty of policy and culture gaps, issues such as child marriage, female circumcision, polygamy, and the moral policing of women's clothing remain prevalent in Malaysia. But NGOs are also celebrating the fact that issues related to women are being addressed with policy. Laws related to stalking and sexual harassment are in the works, and there are also initiatives like iSuri to help support women.
I just wanted to quickly bring it back to the theme, Balance for Better, right? Because I think too often women's rights and feminism is kind of pitched as this us versus them kind of situation, when it really isn't the case. I mean, fundamentally, women's rights make things better for everyone. It doesn't take away from anything. And women's issues are human issues. So women working actually contributes to our GDP in huge ways. If you make spaces safer for women, then spaces are safer for everyone. If you close the gender pay gap, then that means households earn more. So overall, I mean, there are a lot of quote-unquote women's issues, but ultimately they end up, I think, lifting up society generally if they're addressed.
And when I think about the team Balance for Better, I seem to want to try to address how maybe men can be part of that, right? How they can play a role. And I think one step to that is perhaps by rethinking your own personal role in your own life, right? So if you're a father, if you say things like, oh, I'm helping take care of the kids tonight, or, oh, I'm helping with the chores tonight. Well, no, you should say, like, I am taking care of the kids tonight. I am doing the chores today. So that's just a simple language switch. But, you know, it is a choice they are making to say those words, because you're choosing to actively take those roles that and say that, yes, I am the father and I am a husband, and the child caring role and the house taking care role is also mine. Same vein, if you are, say, an employer, reevaluate how you pay your staff, do a critical analysis. Are you accidentally perpetuating the gender gap? Are you hiring fairly? Are you giving equal opportunities to both men and women?
And so we wanted to explore this, right? So we're going to be speaking with two women today who are pushing boundaries in their fields, one in social work, the other in STEM, two very different worlds with very different gender ratios, one being more traditionally dominated by women, the other more traditionally dominated by men. First up, we're going to be speaking with Sudha Nair, founder and executive director of PAVE, which is an organization dedicated to preventing family violence. And that will be coming your way right after this on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:11 p.m. This is the Evening Edition. And today, in conjunction with International Women's Day, we're exploring the work of two remarkable women in two very different fields. First up, we've got on the line Sudha Nair. She's been a social worker for over 30 years. She's founder and executive director of PAVE, which is the first organization in Singapore dedicated to preventing family violence. Sudha's also the first social worker to be appointed as a member of the Public Service Commission in Singapore. Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Talk to us about how you started working in issues relating to family violence and why you started PAVE.
Actually, I started my profession working with families with multiple problems, you know, what we would normally call dysfunctional families. And among those families were, I saw a lot of families, you know, going through spousal violence. It's really very complex to work with them, and the issues were difficult. But then I began to realize that we're not just dealing with the adults, you know. There were serious long-term impacts on children, and women who were in that situation had to access so many services while they were going through the trauma of being abused before getting help, you know. So there was one particular case that actually prompted me to decide that, look, you know, we cannot be allowing people to be running from pillar to post in their traumatic state. So I came back to my agency and talked to my fellow colleagues, and you know, we actually looked at how we could possibly set up a specialist service just for them, more like a first stop service, you know, for them, so that they could get counseling and the various other protective needs that they had at one place, rather than running around. So at that point, I also approached the family court, you know, to ask how could we bring justice into the community? Because at that point, most of the cases to apply for protection, you had to go to the family court, you know. And we were looking at, you know, can we help these families experiencing violence apply for protection in the community and not only the courts? At the same time, get counseling immediately, you know. So that was the birth of our video link service, which we now have with the family courts, where somebody could walk into our agency and within a few hours get protection by the time they leave, you know. And really, that changed the provision of social services for us here in Singapore. And, you know, the other thing that I also realized was that just working with survivors, which is very important, you know, because they've gone through the trauma and they needed to be empowered, was not enough. You know, we realized that we really needed to work with the children. But the person who really we need to target is the person who abuses, you know. So we started a program that targets specifically persons who abuse, you know, to help them to stop the violence and to find an alternative way of behaving. So we have women's programs, we have programs for people who abuse, and we also provide trauma work for children who have either been maltreated or who have experienced or witnessed violence. And for these families, if they feel that, you know, there's hope, you know, to carry on being together and the violence has stopped, we also offer them marital work when the violence ends.
So you've been pushing for changes at both the policy level and individual level. Did you face any difficulties in the early days of your work at PAVE?
Yeah, actually, you know, in 1997, there were certain changes that came about in the Women's Charter, and that made work very much easier for us. You know, like we for example, there was mandatory counseling, you know, so the courts could issue a mandatory counseling order for families who were experiencing violence, you know. So where the law was concerned, it really opened doors for us to move into the family where previously we couldn't, you know. But some of the early difficulties were, you know, finding the right staff. Funding was a major issue in the earlier days. And, you know, we had to do fundraising as compared fundraising in addition to the casework and the public education and research we were doing. But then the government came in, you know, to provide us with funding support, and that eased the situation tremendously. So now we don't even have to look for funding, and we can concentrate on the professional work. But dealing with the systems was also difficult, you know, when the initial stages, we didn't quite understand what the police, for example, were up to or what they were doing. But eventually we managed to build up a relationship with them and understood their difficulties in working with family violence cases. And once we were able to understand, then both of us, both the police and the social services, began to work hand in hand towards a co-creation of solutions for these families.
Earlier you mentioned that it's important to also focus on perpetrators to nip the violence in the bud. Talk to us about that approach and what it's revealed to you about gender dynamics when it comes to family violence.
Okay, in a lot of organizations and a lot of countries, the focus always has been on working with the women, because primarily violence, between 94% to 96% of victims of violence are women, you know, worldwide, and the males are usually the perpetrators. And so if you look at, you try to understand the gender issues in violence, it's understandable the way we are brought up, the way we are socialized, you know, to look at men's and women's issues. A lot of it is through their socialization processes, you know, and the messages that they get, you know. So in the men's program, it's really about challenging the men's beliefs. You know, a lot of the men who come through the program have very fixed beliefs about religion, about the way a woman should behave. And really the men's program is really to look at, to challenge some of these beliefs and to, you know, if you want to stop the violence, you need to replace it with something else. So to learn new techniques about how to manage, you know, their behaviors, their their expectations, for example, and violence is about disrespectful behavior. So how to work respectfully with another member of the family, how to deal with conflicts that doesn't resolve in hurting somebody you love, you know. So work with the men is very, very important. You know, we really need to get them to recognize that here is a problem and that they need to recognize it, but there are ways to manage it, and at the end of the day, what they want is to keep the families together. No man in a violent relationship wants the relationship to end, you know. So they need to learn alternative ways of behaving. So the men, working with the men and boys is really very, very, very important.
But how true is the saying that habits die hard? And what's the success rate of the programs with the perpetrators?
Our experience is that, you know, women have an opportunity to, women are more likely to come forward and seek help from friends and family members, you know. But for men, it's very hard, you know, for them to talk about their issues, right? You don't go to your friend and you thump him on his back and say, hey, today I hit my wife. You don't do that, you know. So, but having a platform for them, so very often men don't have a platform to talk about issues that they are dealing with, right? So at PAVE, by creating this program for men, and we do individual as well as groups for men, where they come together to talk about not only the violence, but also some of these gendered beliefs and, you know, and some of their socialization patterns and the messages that they grew up with. Once they begin talking about it, they also have an option to talk about some of their own issues which they have not been able to deal with. Very often when with some of the men, a lot of it has to do with shame, you know, because they do love their wives. Sometimes they are very shameful for what they have done. Some of them have no remorse. And that group of people, you know, we have to admit that group of people, it's very hard. If you don't believe in change and you don't want to change, no amount of counseling is going to help. But if you care for somebody in the family, you care for your children, you care for what happens to your family, then change can occur. We've had quite a bit of success with changing men around. You know, many of the men are actually ambassadors to PAVE. They come back and they either bring other men or some of them actually come back and are co-facilitators with us in our men's program and challenge the other men because, you know, they've been there, done that, and they're able to pick out some of the issues that the men are talking about and challenge them, you know. So I would say that we've had quite a fair success, although admittedly, there are some men who refuse to change and who've actually gone back and continued their bad behavior. But we admit that, you know, we can change some and we can't for some others.
So being a woman working on this issue, how do you manage the dynamics, especially when you're working with male clients? Are there any challenges, you know, specific to that situation for you?
Yeah. I think, you know, when perpetrators or victims come to an organization, a social service organization, naturally they come with a lot of misperceptions, right? So the law that we have is the Women's Charter, okay, which looks at protection for families, actually. It's not just for women. It's for anybody in the family who is abused, right? But it's called the Women's Charter. So sometimes when the men come, they feel that, you know, the law is sides women, you know, so they come in and they see a woman social worker, so that the angst gets up, you know, that, you know, I see a police officer who's woman, I go to the family court and it's a woman judge, and then I come to you for counseling and you're a woman social worker, you know. But after a while, when they begin to see that we are not there to judge them, okay, we are there to hear them out and we are there to challenge their beliefs, then they don't see us as male or female, we are just social workers, you know. That has been my experience, you know. Not everybody may have this experience, but sometimes they do challenge us, which is why in the men's program, we always have a co-facilitator. We have a man and a woman who co-facilitate the men's program, you know. And so we can ensure that when we disagree, we disagree respectfully, you know. And if it's a male bonding kind of session, then the woman who is a female social worker comes in to give her perspective of what's going on in their wife's life, you know. So that has really been very helpful for us, you know.
And Sudha, at the moment, social work still seems to be considered women's work. You know, more volunteers and social workers tend to be women, and it's not considered a quote-unquote masculine field. Is that perception something that you have to deal with?
Yeah. I think for a long time, this has been true. Because if you look at the history of social work, especially in the Asian region or even internationally, women have primarily been social workers, you know. But I think this perception is changing. For us to increase the number of men coming in, you know, just like we have seen in the teaching profession, one of the things that has really helped is really improving salaries. Right? So salaries, improving the salaries for both men and women is important, right? Because you both of them, whether they are men or women, need to look after their families, and you can't pay pittance, because social work is not a voluntary job. You know, it's a profession, you know, and all of us have to go through 3 to 4 years of university education to become a social worker. In Singapore, you cannot be a social worker without a social work degree, you know. So number one, increasing salaries is very important. The second thing is getting the profession recognition that it is a profession and it's not a voluntary job, you know, is also very important. What we are seeing now is, you know, two trends that I'm actually seeing. One is that we see a lot of mid-career people, you know, in their mid-career wanting to switch jobs, and they want to find meaning in their work. So we see a lot of men, you know, switching jobs and coming into the social work profession, you know, and that's a good thing. And we want to encourage more and more of them to come forward. The other is younger people who have a strong sense of justice and want to do good. They are also seeing that perhaps social work is an area that they can come into. So these are the trends that we are seeing nowadays. So we are beginning to see more men in social service.
Are there any cases that have stood out for you until this day?
Gosh, I've got so many. It's been, you know, 30 years of work with these families. Yeah, many, many cases. But, I think the greatest reward for us is to, you know, to see children who have grown up in families that have been very violent, you know, now as adults, you know, having changed their lives and having a good life, you know, because especially with children, you know, when you grow up in a violent home, you know, it can affect you both emotionally and cognitively, academically, you know. And so the early intervention is very, very important. So having worked with some of these children, you know, when they were very young, and now seeing them, you know, having had that opportunity of going through university or a polytechnic or some level of tertiary education or just completing secondary school and doing well, that has been a real great reward. So that's one. The second one, I think, would be, you know, when you see women who are so disempowered and, you know, who've lost total hope, telling you, you know, now I can finally smile again. That's a fantastic reward, you know. And I think the third example I would give is, you know, having a man come back and saying that, you know, his marriage is now doing well and his wife and he are now thinking of having another child. To think that marriage could have broken down had not intervention been provided for them, that to us is a tremendous reward.
What's the advice that you give to younger social workers when dealing with situations when the going gets tough?
I think the first thing is that you never go at it alone. You know, you always need to seek support from your seniors. And if you don't have a group of senior social workers whom you can get support from, you know, seek support from an external party, you know. The second thing is that, you know, believe in the concept of change. You know, like what I said earlier, that you really need to sometimes when things get really tough, but you always have in your vision the idea that, you know, you've come into this profession because you really want to see change, you know. And in my experience, you know, I've seen this, you know, I've looked at advocacy for so many years and have you know, advocated for change in legislation for so many years, and I actually saw it happen because, you know, you need perseverance. So I would say perseverance is the other thing. You don't give up when things get tough, you know. The other thing is that, you know, families are often very grateful So we come into this profession not because of the money or not because of the recognition, but because we really believe that that somewhere along the line in the work that we do, change can occur, and I've seen this, so that's the one thing that keeps us going, lah. So maybe if I could look at one positive change that I have seen in the years that I've been working, apart from individual, from seeing change in individual clients, for 18 years, my agency and I have been working towards getting protection for people in an intimate partner relationship. So these are people who are not married, and the protection under the Women's Charter is for people who are in a marital relationship, It was very difficult for people in an intimate partner relationship to get access easily, So we continued to advocate for almost 18 years, and finally this year, the change has occurred, And I think the minister announced it in the papers, and it's going to Parliament sometime in the middle of the year. That's what I would say is PAVE's biggest accomplishment. So, if we had left the profession, or I'd left the profession earlier, we wouldn't have seen this through. So perseverance, I think, is a very important trait to have. And continuous learning, going back to your books, going back to your theories, often help. It's not alone about a good heart. It's really about good brains as well.
Sudha, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Sudha Nair, founder and executive director of PAVE, speaking to us about social work. It being International Women's Day today, we wanted to explore the work of remarkable women. So we've spoken to Sudha about social work. Up next, we're going to be talking about something that's almost on the exact opposite of the scale. We're going to be talking about STEM, right? Because there is still that lack of representation in the fields of science, technology, engineering, mathematics. So we'll be speaking to Ayu Abdullah, who is the Southeast Asia Regional Director of Energy Action Partners. And that will be coming up after the 6:30 news. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, PFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.